Welcome to The Vampire Squid, a podcast about increasing transparency and education in finance. This is your host, Alan Lee, and welcome to episode 36 of The Vampire Squid. I finally got over my cold, so my voice is a little bit better this week. However, I recorded this podcast last week, so it still sounds a bit stuffy. So please excuse me for that, but today's episode is really cool because it is cross-listed with one of my friend's podcasts, and he just started it, and it's called The Virtual MBA. So if you guys are interested in potentially getting your MBA or listening to MBA students and their experiences and what they've thought about their MBA and going through business school, please feel free to give it a check out. I will include a link into my show notes in case you guys are interested in checking that out. But today's episode, we cover my background, how I started the podcast, and you know my thoughts on the MBA and if I'm currently following that route. So a mix of my background, the podcast, and my thoughts on the MBA. I hope that you guys enjoy. And as always, if you guys have any questions, comments, suggestions, please feel free to email me at Alan, A-L-A-N, at thevampiresquid.com. And you could always check out my Facebook page, facebook.com/thevampiresquid, and give it a like. So I hope that you guys enjoy the podcast. And without further ado, here it is.
So, Alan, welcome to the show. Why don't you start us off telling us about your background, who you are, what you're doing, where you went to undergrad, all that stuff.
Sure. Thanks for having me on, Alex, too. So a little bit of background of myself. I was born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia. I went to Berkeley for undergrad, studied business, and did a couple years in investment banking, and currently in New York doing private equity. So that's just a very quick, brief background on myself.
Sure. So you went to you're from Atlanta, you went to Berkeley, studied business, probably with the idea the entire time of getting into investment banking?
Well, it was interesting because I didn't really know what investment banking was until I think midway through my freshman year. And I had joined a business fraternity on campus, and only then did I really find out what investment banking was, because a lot of the members in the organization had done it. But I was actually unaware coming in as a freshman.
Got it. And then did you do an internship your junior year?
Yeah, so I did an internship at Goldman my junior year in San Francisco. And on the West Coast, Goldman covers mostly technology investment banking in the Bay Area.
Right. So you did the internship, and that's how most people get their first job in investment banking. You did the internship, they made you the offer, and then you had a fun senior year of college and then went back to work hard hours at Goldman in San Francisco.
That is accurate.
And it sits in the TMT group, but it's mostly the first T, the technology that you guys are, TMT stands for technology, media, telecom. So you were working more on the technology side, right?
Exactly. So in the West Coast, it's more technology, and in New York is more the media and the telecom.
Right. So you're an analyst there. And so why don't you tell us like what your thought process was as you were there for what, a little over 2 years? And that's kind of how most analysts, that's the tenure most analysts are there for. So what are you and others like you thinking when you're doing those investment banking years?
Yeah. So I did just under 2 years. And, you know, investment banking has traditionally, I think, been a good platform to start off your career. You learn many things from financial modeling to presentations, but I think the big draw factor for me was also to interact a lot with more senior people at companies. 'Cause I think there are very few jobs straight out of college where you get to work directly with a CFO or vice president of corporate development at some of these very large technology companies. And I think that exposure early on was a pretty big draw factor, at least for me, going into investment banking. And I think the way that most people think about it during their 2 years is, you know, just learn as much as possible. Obviously, it's the first job out of college, so we don't really necessarily know that much. So we're trying to get deep into the financial modeling, understanding how companies work, working through complex transactions, and you know, really deciding if this is potentially something that we want to do. And if not, there's, you know, many opportunities, you know, after investment banking as well.
Right. That's kind of the crux of it, is that you work these long hours, but you get a great skill set from it, and then it opens up a tremendous amount of opportunities. So were you thinking you wanted to go work for a technology-focused private equity fund? Is that kind of how most people think about it?
Yeah, it's I would say on the West Coast, it's a little bit more diverse than how investment banks traditionally work on the East Coast, or specifically New York. So a lot of my friends in my analyst class went on to do a wide range of things. So some went into obviously the traditional private equity route. Some went into venture capital. Some went to be, you know, business operations at a high growth startup. So the range of exit opportunities is a little bit more broad, at least on the West Coast, because of the exposure to tech and venture capital community and all these startups out there.
Right. So what did you end up deciding to go do?
Yeah, so I really wanted to move to New York, because during our investment banking, or right before our banking career started, we had a month and a half of training in New York. And I had a blast while I was out here in New York, and I always wanted to live in the Northeast, at least for a few years, because, so I lived in Georgia for 14 years, I lived in San Diego for about 3 years, and then, you know, Berkeley and San Francisco for about 6 years. So I thought it was a logical move to cover the four corners of the U.S. But New York has been great so far, and it's quite cold now, and you can probably tell that I have a little bit of a cold right now. But I've been enjoying my time in New York for the past 5-6 months.
Right. And so was this private equity fund that you're at now, did you get it through the normal way of recruiting, where they hire a year, 18 months in advance? Was it that kind of job?
Yeah, exactly. So, the job happens, or the private equity recruiting or buy-side recruiting happens in Q1 of your first year as an analyst. So I joined about July, August of 2014, and in February of 2015, people start recruiting for these jobs.
Right. That's wild. You're 6 months into a job and you're recruiting for your next job that's going to start 18 months out. Yeah.
It's crazy. And even, even this year, it started last week.
Right.
So it's earlier and earlier, and it's interesting because, you know, you're 4 months, maybe 5 months onto the job, probably didn't have that much exposure, but now these firms are giving you offers, and you basically have an offer for the next year and a half. So the motivation to work very hard at a job that you know you're going to leave is a little bit, you know, contrary.
Yeah, there's definitely something broken in that whole system. I don't think it's sustainable. Something has to change. I mean, these banks have to figure out ways to retain their analysts in a more efficient way, don't you think?
Yeah, so I think, you know, at least at Goldman, they were going through this route or doing this initiative where they're actually starting to give associate offers on the same private equity hedge fund recruiting cycle. So, you know, in January and February, they would let you know if you would potentially get an associate offer after your 2 years of banking, which is traditionally not common. Banks are starting to realize that they need to recruit some of the talent that they're hiring, since they're spending quite a bit of money to train us, to teach us. They realize that the 2 year program isn't necessarily the best option anymore.
Right. They can get a much higher return if they can keep you there for a little bit longer. I mean, I get that their return is probably repaid somewhere in between years one and years two, so they're okay, but much better return on investment if they get you to stay even just a little bit longer. So what's the focus of the fund that you're at now? Does it have a technology component?
Yeah, so it is mostly technology and telecom. And the fund now specifically looks at transactions that are usually going through a technological change. So usually when companies are going through these changes, the public markets don't necessarily give them the value that they deserve, since they're usually maybe taking a hit on revenue, since they're recognizing over a longer period if they're moving to a SaaS-based model. And our fund looks at these types of transactions, and through our executive partners, through our portfolio companies, we think that we could provide some value to the company by taking them private, and then hopefully taking them back public in the next 3 to 5 years, or selling them to another company.
Got it. And are you the only one in your class? Did they hire another ex-investment banking analyst to come work in your same cohort?
Yeah, so there's usually 2 to 3 per class.
There's 2 to 3 per class. And in your GS class, what were there, like 5 or 6?
In my SF class, there were, I believe, 9 in our group, in the TMT group.
Right. So at least there's another couple guys or gals there for you to work with. I have buddies, they come out of these banking groups where there's 5, 6, 8, or 9. And then they go to a place and they're the only one there. It's kind of a shock.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that, definitely there are some private equity shops that are a little bit smaller. And, even some hedge funds that are just a PM and maybe a couple analysts. So, the banking is definitely, I think, a good transition from college, since our analyst class is actually quite large, which is a few hundred people. But, our specific group was a little bit smaller. But you do feel like it's transitioning out of college, because you have training and you have a great group of people that you work with.
So you're on this path that they call 2-2-2. So you did 2 years of banking. Now normally people do 2 years of private equity and then they go do 2 years of business school, and it's not always the case. The banking is pretty standard. People do 2 years of that, they want to get out, and then they go do however many years of private equity, and if they can stay, great. But sometimes these larger funds require you to leave after a couple of years to go to business school, and then you can go back. So is that the path that you think you're on?
Yeah, so I think that it's definitely an option that I'm considering, business school later in the year. So if I was to apply, I would likely apply at the end of the year for, I think, the applications start in August or September. But I'm also not 100% tied to it as well. So I took my GMAT in college because I knew that I didn't necessarily want to, have to study for the GMAT while on the job, because I know it can be quite difficult to balance, full-time job and trying to study for the GMAT. But, as I've gone through banking and, gone through a little bit of private equity, I've also considered other options in terms of maybe a more entrepreneurship route, because I know that, quite a few people say the $200,000 that you could potentially spend on business school, if you take that money and maybe start a company or go through another venture, it could be, just as value added as you could have in a business school environment. So it's definitely something that has been on my mind, and I don't think I've fully decided either way yet. But always considering the two options.
Right. Well, it's good to have your options open, and it's amazing that you've taken the GMAT. That was good foresight into your career here. So you talk about balancing work and starting for the GMAT, but you did something really cool, I think, and you had this other extracurricular activity where you started a podcast, and that's kind of how you and I came to know one another. So how did that come to be? You have a podcast, I'll let you describe it. It's called The Vampire Squid. I'll let you tell us what that title means, but so tell us about that effort.
Yeah, no, happy to. So the podcast I started in, the idea came around in June. So I had quit banking around May, June time period, and I was traveling actually in New York and in Europe with my girlfriend. And during that time, we you know, we're going through many different countries, you know, island hopping, and sometimes we would have long train rides, or we'd be on flights. And she actually just started her banking career, in August of 2016. So she was just asking me for some tips, and some advice and things that I learned, you know, during my tenure in investment banking, you know, so that she could, you know, understand what her responsibilities would be as an investment banking analyst and, you know, what she could expect. And as we were having these conversations, I think, it sort of dawned on me that these conversations could be useful to other people. And I thought that there should be a way that I could share this type of content with other people. So I thought about potentially writing something in terms of a blog. But I realized that my writing skills aren't that strong. And I had started listening to podcasts maybe about a year and a half ago, and I really fell in love with the medium. Because it feels like you actually know the other person. You feel like you have a personal connection with them. So I had been listening to a podcast by Tim Ferriss. I'm not sure if you listened to that podcast, but that was one of the ones that got me, hooked on listening to podcasts. So I realized that I was a little bit more comfortable speaking than I was with writing. I really liked how podcasts worked and I liked the format. So after the trip, I came back and bought a microphone and, started recording, the Vampire Squid.
Cool. So the idea is to, improve people's knowledge of what goes on in finance and the investment banking worlds. They're kind of, industries that people are really interested in, but you're right. Even for your girlfriend going into it, people have a lot of questions about it. So I totally see the value of it. And the name Vampire Squid, that's, kind of a derogatory term people call Goldman Sachs, right?
Yeah. So the name I wanted to use, isn't necessarily for the purpose of being derogatory. But if you had looked up the vampire squid, and people think of it as a, you know, a blood sucking creature, and, a vampire squid actually doesn't, you know, suck blood at all. It's just a name for how it looks. And I wanted to draw sort of a parallel comparison between how people view the finance community, because, I had this conception that a lot of people viewed people that worked in finance and the finance industry very poorly or with a negative light. So by doing this podcast and by bringing education and transparency to the podcast, I thought that I could maybe reveal to some people, you know, what we do on a day-to-day basis. Because I feel like a lot of times when you don't have a good understanding of a certain group of people or a certain industry, you can be quick to draw conclusions about them that are not necessarily informed. But now at least if people have a very transparent view of what goes on, then they can make, I think, more informed decisions. So that was the ultimate goal of the podcast. Obviously when I did the podcast, my sole experience was in investment banking. So a lot of the earlier episodes were tied to, you know, my experiences and how investment banking works and what I learned. But, as the podcast had gone on, I've brought on many guests from people in private equity, from venture capital, hedge funds. I even brought on a professor in anthropology, that studied Wall Street culture. And I have quite a few interesting other guests coming on in the coming months, but I feel that we're solidly marching towards the goal of increasing transparency in finance. And, I think that it really hit home with a lot of millennial people, since I am a millennial. And I think a lot of these, potential news outlets or these sources are coming from much older people. And having a millennial voice is something that I think resonated with a lot of, millennials that do listen to my podcast.
Right. I mean, I'm a listener. I think it's great. You've had some early success. You've had articles written about it, and it seems like everything's going well. So is there eventually a business here? Is there a business here now?
Interesting you say that. I am actually exploring some partnership opportunities in this upcoming week. I will keep you guys updated. But, you know, right now my sole focus is to get as many interesting people on the podcast as possible and try to get the podcast out there to as many people so that they can have a better understanding of finance and the industry in whole, so that they can, you know, make more informed decisions about how they think about people in finance and the industry.
Right. That makes sense. So is your girlfriend, is she working in banking in New York?
She is actually on the West Coast.
She's in San Francisco too?
Yeah. Yeah.
Following your path.
Yeah, quite a few people in the business organization that I was a part of had gone on to investment banking. Although I feel like there is a little bit of a trend against investment banking as of recently, since there's quite a bit of opportunities in other industries, and not necessarily even in finance, but technology specifically has attracted quite a bit of talent as well. I think, you know, back in the day, investment banking was, you know, one of the top jobs that people went after. But now I think some of the top jobs that people go after are, you know, high growth startups, which has been quite fascinating.
Yeah, that's exactly the case in my MBA class. Banking, I think, used to demand 70 or 80 jobs a year, and I think it's down closer to 30 now. And technology is making up that gap. Everyone wants to go work for a small technology company, a large technology company. That's everyone's goal right now, it seems like. That and consulting. Consulting's still really popular.
Got it.
So I'll get you out of here on this. I like to golf. You like to golf. You moved to a cold place, to a big city. Not great for golf, right?
Yeah. So I actually haven't gotten a chance to go out and play. I have my clubs here. Right now is probably not the best time to get back into it. But I think once, you know, March or April hits around, I'll get back into the swing of things.
Yeah. Do those clubs take up like a quarter of your apartment?
So, I mean, I've lived in SF and then now in New York. Both are extremely expensive rent places. And it is the clubs do take up a bit of space, but I think they're worth it.
Cool. All right. Well, that was really everything I wanted to talk about. I think it was a cool conversation. So thanks so much for speaking with me.
Yeah. No, thank you, Alex.
Okay. Talk to you later.